Hey, what's going on, Lacey? What's going on, Tyler, Sean? How are you guys doing today?
Hey, how's it going, Brandon? We're good, thanks. Yourself?
Doing pretty good, pretty good. Excited to talk about some hydroponics with you guys.
Yeah, us too. Thanks for having us.
And we can get started. We do have the replays on, and this is the Food Girls United Clubhouse group. And we are excited today to be here with Tyler and Sean from Zip Grow. You guys know we talk a lot about hydroponics in here almost every single day, and they are here to kind of dispel some of the misconceptions and just break it down and easily explain to us just what hydroponics is, and why that's a beneficial way to grow food. So welcome, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Brandon. Thanks for having us, and thanks for everybody who's joining up here. We are both pretty new to Clubhouse here, so this is our first room. So hopefully we can keep it together here and doing all right job. But yeah, we're excited to do this, and definitely excited to talk some hydroponics with y'all. So today we just kind of wanted to give you a little background on kind of who we are, where we come from, and in our company and stuff. And then we're just going to kind of go into a lot of the kind of basics and sort of fundamentals around hydroponics in general, what it is, what it means, a little bit of the history of kind of where hydroponics comes from. And we'll go into kind of some of the different hydroponic techniques. The different types of equipment that you might see out there, pros and cons of kind of each of those. We'll talk a little bit about some of the limiting factors and sort of how those affect your yields, things like that. And then, yeah, we're just hoping to kind of go over that. We'll keep it pretty casual, and then hopefully there are a lot of questions later on that we can sort of address. So, like Brandon said, we are from Zip Grow. We been doing vertical hydroponics now for a number of years. I started with a company called Bright Agrotech, went to a larger company called Plenty, and then have kind of continued on with the Zip Grow tower technology to a company now, which is called Zip Grow. We are based up in Eastern Ontario, Canada. I'm actually located down here in Southeast Wyoming. But let's see. Yeah, I guess that's kind of it for that. We also do a if anybody's interested in kind of diving deeper into a lot of these topics, we've got a sort of an educational platform called Upstart University. You can Google that. It's goes really in depth on a number of kind of these fundamentals, but also goes into lots of different categories of like starting a business if that's kind of what you're wanting to do with hydroponics. And legal things, all sorts of different topics in there. So it's a really good tool that we're pretty proud of. So check that out if you're interested. So yeah, I think we'll get started here. So I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about kind of what hydroponics in general is and sort of what the soil typically does for plants, and then how we kind of aim to replicate that without soil. So that's kind of a good segue to say that hydroponics, if you're not aware, is the process of growing plants in some sort of sometimes sand, gravel, or just straight liquid, and have something to anchor the plant. But the whole idea there is that it's not growing in soil, so all the nutrients and support and all of that stuff is being provided by other means. So I'll go through some of the basics of this, and then Tyler, who's joining me today, he's sort of our master grower with Zip Grow. So he's going to go into the actual kind of detail stuff with this and provide a lot more information that is a bit over my head. So, like I said, in traditional soil production, the soil is providing the actual plant anchoring, so that's providing the stability for the plant to grow. The soil also kind of helps retain moisture for an extended period of time. So that helps retain water for the plant. It also delivers, obviously, the nutrients that the plant needs. Those are going to be you know, your macro and micronutrients that Tyler will go into a little bit more depth later on, kind of how those, what those do in the plant biology and things like that. The soil also helps with, you know, environmental stability. So helps kind of keep, you know, humidity, temperature, you know, oxygen for the plant, kind of by providing that thermal mass. And then also helps supply, you know, beneficial microbes to the plant. So, you know, those exist in the soil in all different forms and are super beneficial for the plants. So in hydroponic production, obviously we have to replace all of those functions that the soil is providing traditionally. So kind of the first thing, in order to provide the stability for the plant, there's a number of ways of doing this, and we'll get into a little bit more detail on this when we talk about kind of the different techniques of hydroponic production. But for example, in the zip grow towers, you know, we're growing in a true vertical plane, which means our towers are oriented, you know, vertically, and the plants grow out sort of perpendicular to that. So in order to anchor the root system of the plants, we've got what we call our matrix media inside of the towers. That's a basically a plastic media. It's made from recycled water bottles. And that's approximately like 93% just pore space. So it's a really good zone of, you know, oxygenation and a really good anchor for those roots to just take hold in there. And, you know, in other kind of methods, you know, whether it's bedo buckets or something that might have, you know, expanded shale in there or gravel, something like that. Those are other means of anchoring the plant, as well as, you know, the different types of plugs that you find out there. So rock wool, foam plugs, peat plugs, all those types of things also can, you know, provide the anchoring for that. So if you're, you know, growing in an NFT channel or something, those plugs will, you know, drop right into your net pots, and that'll be kind of the anchoring for the plant. As far as, you know, in hydroponics, being able to supply the nutrients to the plants, we're doing that, I guess, within hydroponics, there's a couple of subcategories, I guess. The most popular probably is just, you know, straight up sort of nutrients dissolved into a solution. So these can come in, you know, there's dry nutrients that you can mix yourself. There's pre-mixed liquid nutrients that a lot of different manufacturers make. Those are really handy for sort of a home grower, or, you know, if you're doing it on a small scale, they're really easy to use, generally really well formulated, as far as like pH and things like that. And then kind of another subcategory within hydroponics is called aquaponics, which is where you pair a hydroponic system with an aquaculture system, meaning that you've got tanks of fish. The fish are producing waste. That waste is used for the nutrients for the plants. The plants kind of help, you know, re-clean that water in the cases where it's recirculated back to the fish tanks in you know, clean water. And then the cycle goes on. So those are a couple of probably the most popular ways of providing nutrient solution in a hydroponic system. There are some, you know, some sort of like organic alternatives that that you can do with this. They're not quite as readily available or quite as easy to use, but they are out there, and you know, there's lots of work still going on to help develop those further. But you know, those nutrient solutions, whether it's, you know, a dry nutrient or a premixed nutrient, you know, those come with generally with your kind of macro and micronutrients. So your nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus, iron, magnesium, and then it goes, you know, further into some of those other things. And then, as far as the microbes go, you know, there are, more and more sort of, products for providing some, microbes to your hydroponic systems. I'll have to have Tyler kind of cover that in a little bit more detail. I'm not as familiar with those specifically.
Sean, can I ask you a question real quick while we're in this little section? Because I know that I'm sure that other people are going to be thinking about, you know, if they're new to growing in a system like this, like me, but are cognizant of different types of materials that we're using in the soil garden. Can you talk a little bit about the plastics that you're using within the system and any sort of leaching?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, that's obviously a concern, you know, with, we've obviously heard about some of that stuff with different types of plastics over the years here, as, you know, plastics are, you know, relatively new kind of in our, you know, in the world, I guess, as it were, compared to other things. But yeah, so typically, like in all of our stuff, we use a virgin grade PVC, meaning it's, you know, there's a lot of PVC products out there that are kind of recycled, and, you know, it's hard to kind of keep track of where those, you know, kind of come from. So we use a virgin grade PVC, very stable, you know, doesn't, you know, we don't have concerns with that leaching and things like that. This is, you know, similar to the type of product, you know, piping and stuff that like your home has to deliver water to your, you know, your tap water and things like that. So it's a, you know, potable water supply, material. And then same with the media as well. Like I said, that is, recycled, but it's, you know, there's lots of tests and stuff done on that to kind of, make sure that that's not a concern. And then of course, like on some of the other, products out there, whether it's, you know, buckets or, like Beto buckets or NFT channels, things like that, it's, kind of a similar story with most of that stuff as well. So does that kind
you
of,
mind if I say, Sean, and just to add to that, like people sometimes are concerned because the matrix media is made of recycled water bottle. That's PET1 plastic or PET plastic. And, you know, as they always tell you, you know, you're not supposed to reuse water bottles because leaching, et cetera. We do have a process for stabilizing that plastic. So you're not going to run into the leaching issues that you'd have with, say, a water bottle. It is encapsulated. It's made to be safe. It meets food safety standards in that way. And most of the industry of hydroponics, it's a lot of ABS or a lot of PVC. Those are kind of the two major components. And the reason for that is because they are so stable. It's actually PVC, ABS is sometimes a lot better than things like stainless steel, simply because things like peroxides and other additives and even some nutrients can still corrode and break down metals, whereas PVC and ABS actually hold up better than some of these metals do.
And then can I ask, so just like, let's say, for example, people who don't like even have a choice, but they use like certain plastics like to grow their foods. The concern that people have about like the leaching, is that something that happens like when that plastic is like exposed to like the sun, like for a long time, like with that, like if people are like growing indoors, I'm just always curious, like what even makes like the plastic like leach? Is it the material like that's in it, the sun, just like it's going to happen regardless?
So I don't really know exactly how that process works across, you know, all plastics. But specifically like PVC, for example, isn't in its bare form UV stable. You know, if you put PVC pipe outside, or if any of you have ever built a hoop house with PVC, you'll notice, you know, you got 3 or 4 good years before it gets really brittle and starts breaking down. So everything we have that is PVC or white PVC, we actually include titanium dioxide. And that's an element that actually reflects and protects against UV damage in plastics. It helps keep things nice and white, nothing yellows, and it actually protects the plastic from sunlight. So it can be used both, you know, indoors and in a greenhouse. Obviously, indoors, you're not dealing with the same extent of UV damage, you know, that the sun can provide, but it's still something to be concerned and aware of. But for the most part, most of the hydroponic systems you work with that are PVC or ABS are UV stable. To a degree, for that exact reason. It's both, you know, leaching and just longevity. They just won't last otherwise.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. Did that kind of answer your question there as far as those materials go?
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate you guys like clearing that up. It's like a clear, concise, good answer. And it's pretty dope that you guys like added that to your product, like with that in mind too.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like, you know, hydroponics in general kind of has been around long enough now, especially some of the older kind of more traditional techniques like NFT and stuff. You know, there's been those type of products operating, you know, decades now. And that's definitely something that's been held up well with those materials in mind. So, so that was kind of like my brief little sort of intro just on what hydroponics is, you know, what we're looking to do as far as how we're replacing, you know, what soil traditionally kind of does for the plants. So I think I'll let Tyler hop in here. I think he's going to do a little bit on sort of the history of hydroponics, and then we'll start going into some of the different types of techniques and equipment that you'll see out there. So go for it, Tyler.
Thanks, Sean. So I started doing this deep dive into the history of hydroponics and trying to come up with notes on it. And honestly, you could do a full podcast on that alone. It's quite an interesting and kind of deep history. Obviously people have been growing plants in water for a lot longer than modern civilization, but just to give a rough background on it. So it really kind of the modern hydroponics as we commercially see it today started with this guy, Dennis Hoagland. And if you ever do any reading into hydroponics in research papers or whatever, you often hear that name come up as Hoagland solution. So Dennis Hoagland actually wasn't doing anything hydroponically, but he was the first person to really discover and kind of break down how different nutrients are absorbed by plants and how, you know, you can't just give the same level of everything, how, you know, that balance of different salts and solutions is so important to regulate and encourage healthy growth. So he developed this liquid solution that was essentially the, in a way, the perfect balance to grow a plant in. And he was watering plants and soil with it, but he figured essentially the first liquid nutrients fertilizer. Interestingly enough, he strongly felt already back then, and I think this is like 1915, that there's no such thing as an optimal solution. So essentially his point was like, this is the basis to grow plants in general, but there's no such thing as an optimal solution. Like every plant, every genetic, you know, strain, every cultivar, every environment, you're going to have to change this. And he made a strong point of that. And then, you know, a couple of years later, there's this gentleman named William Frederick Garrick. So he's considered kind of the father of hydroponics as we know it. And he really identified a lot of like key parts of hydroponics. So, you know, how important oxygen is around the root zone, you know, pH and how it affects nutrient uptake. He discovered a lot of this stuff and made it, more commonplace in research. And a lot of people kind of thought he was crazy. This guy was talking about what he called water culture plants. And he eventually coined the term hydroponic, and essentially he grew a tomato plant that was like 25 feet tall, you know, against all odds, even though everybody said it wasn't possible. And he became famous all of a sudden in all these research papers. And I think it's a really interesting point to point out that Garrick, he faced a ton of criticism for his unconventional approaches to growing food. And it draws some very interesting parallels in the sense that, kind of comparisons to modern society in that he was using, you know, little pills of nutrient salt solution and essentially talked about growing plants with chemical pills. And you can imagine how the media took that and it became this huge thing. And everybody was terrified of what this mad scientist was doing, growing tomatoes with chemical pills. When in reality, he was just doing what modern hydroponics is. He was creating a nutrient solution, feeding it to a plant and growing it. So it's kind of interesting and kind of goes back to the point we always, you know, stress a lot of ZipGrow about transparency and about, you know, no matter how you're growing your plants, it's important to just talk with consumers, you know, communicate how you're growing and the safety aspects and what you're doing and give them the option to have that decision. But, you know, it's crazy how quickly these things can get blown out of proportion as well. And how scary new things can be to people, especially when it revolves around food. So Garrick kind of fathered hydroponics in a way. Many researchers took that over and it really took off, you know, in the 70s. Especially in Europe, as you know, synthetic fertilizers became more commonplace and essentially blew up as an industry. And I mean, a lot of what we talk about at ZipGrow and, you know, on here is about, you know, smaller scale, but, you know, large scale hydroponics has been in a way around for a long time. It's just not what we kind of see as hydroponics. So, you know, we're talking things like rock wool production or even cocoa coir and, you know, tomatoes and cucumbers and strawberries. And we're used that way for quite some time. It's not a new technology in a way. It's just, we have a new way of maybe looking at it. So in terms of different types of hydroponics, and I just like, there's different ways you can classify this. Everybody has different approaches to classifying them. I kind of feel in a way you can't class them into different groups because, you know, there's hybridizations in between and different, you know, combinations of these methods and they can classify differently. But I've kind of broken them down into four main kind of classifications, I guess you could say. And The first one's deep water culture. So that's like what most people see as, you know, when they envision hydroponics, it's like a plant growing with its roots in water, fully submerged, you know, no soil, no media, just growing straight up out of a bucket of water. This is what you call deep water culture. Essentially, the roots are submerged in water. It's short form to DWC or RDWC for recirculating deep water culture quite often. Usually you require aeration, so like an air stone underneath the roots provides oxygen to the roots, you don't get stagnant water. There's usually very little or almost no media or substrate. Sometimes you use a little bit of clay pellets to get the plant going and to provide structure, but then below the clay pellets, it's just pure water. They can be, you know, both recirculating, flowing through a system that filters and adds nutrients, or they can be static in the sense that it's just a bucket that you top up and has air stones in the bottom. And some common systems are what you refer to as a DWC bucket system, floating raft systems. You know, those are the type of systems that are referred to as DWC or kind of fall into that grouping.
Hey, Tyler, just kind of one note on deep water culture, just something to think about. If this is something you're interested in, a lot of times, like some deep water culture systems, you know, you can have kind of pretty large volumes of water, and especially like in a greenhouse, you know, something to think about is the water temperature. So a lot of times, if it's really hot in there, you may have to, you know, have a water chiller to kind of help keep that water cooler. But just by its nature of being kind of a large body of water, especially on a commercial scale. You know, something to consider there. And one kind of cool system that we've just gotten involved with is from a company called Current Culture. And they do these, what Tyler mentioned, as a recirculating deep water culture system. And that really helps kind of keep the water moving a little bit more compared to other DWC systems, and really helps kind of aerate it a little bit more. And we're excited to see those. They work really, really well for, you know, tomatoes, cucumbers, all that type of stuff, those larger statured crops. Go ahead, Tyler.
No, for sure. And it's a good point in the sense that like deep water culture systems are very popular in you know, smaller scale grows, cannabis, they're really popular because most of it's done indoors and you're not dealing with, you know, the 1,000 plant counts that big greenhouses do, but they do have challenges in the way that, you know, the volume of water. Say you have, you know, even 5-gallon pails, you know, if you have 100 of those in series, you know, all flowing together, that means you have to have 500 gallons of water ready to fill them at any point in time. So there are specific challenges. They have big benefits in the sense that, you know, the nutrients are super available. The plants grow very fast. But again, you know, you want to scale that to 1,000 plant sites in a greenhouse, all of a sudden it becomes very limiting when you need 5,000 gallons of water to refill that system. So just things to think about as you design and plan out your system. And then so the next kind of grouping of systems is NFTs or nutrient film technique. These are what a lot of people see in terms of like leafy greens and lettuces and herbs in greenhouses that are grown hydroponically. So like these are these long, white gutters or channels. You know, you have an inlet on one end, an outlet on the other end, and there's a thin, shallow flow of oxygenated and nutrient-dense water that's flowing on the bottom of the trough. The plant sits just above it, and the roots kind of lay in that solution and grow like that. This is pretty popular for like living lettuces. There's a lot of vertical systems that are both, you know, used indoors as well with this because they can stack them over top of each other with LED lights relatively easily. They're pretty compact in terms of space usage. The only really limiting factor is just structure in the sense that like it's hard to grow a big, you know, like tomato or a cucumber or pepper in this system because it would require a lot of trellising, but it can be done. It's just less common for those types of crops. The third type or grouping is aeroponic systems. These systems are really interesting in the sense that they're not submerging the plant in water. The plant roots are usually, contained in a container, are in some kind of structure, and they're actually constantly being misted, misted or fogged with water. Essentially, this mist is, you know, nutrient dense, oxygenated water that's misting against the roots and then falling back down and being recirculated or just in that same, you know, vessel being reused and sprayed on the plant. There's a lot of really recent research coming out about aeroponics, very exciting stuff. There are, you know, huge aeroponic systems I've seen in greenhouses that are used similar to like those floating raft systems. There's also great little DIY kind of home kits. There's some you can buy too, like it's called like an easy cloner for, you know, cloning, you know, mostly cannabis, but you can do like your tomatoes, your peppers, you know, even shrubs and trees cloned in these systems by, you know, taking a cutting and putting it in this little collar and misting the bottom of it with a little pump. We've worked with, again, Current Culture, this company's top notch. They have like one of the best aero cloners, I think, in the market. They're very well known for it. And it's usually used for cannabis. We've actually used it to get some head starts on strawberry, buried strawberries. So, you know, you put this buried strawberry plant that's dormant in there and you can get some awesome, you know, root development before you transplant those in another hydroponic system. Honestly, Brandon, I'm new to this clubhouse thing. I see people are like, want to say something? Do I invite them to speak? How does this work?
Oh yeah, welcome, welcome to the stage, Joe. And then, yeah, I see somebody is raising their hand. And then, guys, if you have a question, you can raise your hand or just ask it to the side in the message. But what's going on, Joe? Go hop in here. Sorry about that, buddy. I know you've been here for a while, hanging out.
No, I've been good. Thank you. How are you guys doing? I was just listening. I was just interested. I was learning a lot right now. It was fun, but I don't have anything to say right now. Thank you.
I did see somebody. Sorry, my kiddos are in here. Somebody in the chat, she asked, is the titanium oxide something that is added to the PVC when manufactured or something you are adding as you grow? So that little chat bubble down in the bottom left-hand corner is the text chat for you guys. But I can jump in with any questions in there too if you would rather not deal with those.
Oh, I can keep an eye on them now too. Sorry, yeah, I'm just learning how this works from my side. Yeah, so actually that's a great question. It is incorporated in the manufacturing process. So this is something that's encapsulated in the plastic in manufacturing. It's not something a grower necessarily needs to worry about. It's more on the manufacturing side. I'm going to invite someone else here. Is it Paige? What are you? You got a question? I'll invite you there.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
How you doing all? Hi, Brandon. Thanks for holding this room, you guys. I think this is amazing. We got to learn how to, you know, farm in our own backyard. So what I'm kind of getting from this. So do your system. So what I'm curious about, I see the ping here or the link. Is this for people who actually want to grow at home too? So a small enterprise as well, Tyler?
Yeah. So, our system is like, one of a million different hydroponic systems you could use. And we advocate for kind of all hydroponic systems. I wouldn't say there's a one size fits all. You got to pick what works for your system. But yeah, ZipGrow, we deal with both, you know, the hobby side and the commercial side. We've got, home systems. So we've actually just launched our Zip Garden. It's called, you see that on our website. It's like a small refrigerator essentially that you can put in your house. It's pretty, you know, productive. You can grow, you know, 15 to 20 heads of lettuce a month out of this thing using our ZipGrow tower technology. So that's like the hobby side. There's also the farm wall, which is like a wall mounted unit using our towers as well. And then there's all the way up to, you know, scalable commercial systems. So everything from, you know, what you produce in your garage or maybe in a shed out back to, 10,000 square foot spaces. We kind of do it all. And obviously, you know, big into the commercial side because that's where, you know, big production is and where a lot of our resources go, but we still have a pretty active hobby community as well.
Yeah, and to kind of add to that, we sell kind of just our towers by themselves as well, and we have a lot of folks, especially when we very first started out, when kind of this whole hydroponics thing was really starting to kind of come into the mainstream a little bit more. We've got stuff that's really suitable for, you know, if anybody's like sort of DIY type of folks, you know, who kind of want to build their own system, the sky is really the limit. I mean, we've had, you know, people build like really amazing installations, like in their kitchens and dining rooms, on their sides of their barns outside, things like that on a fence. So they're suitable for a lot of different things. And then, the great thing about hydroponics is it really lends itself to people of all sorts of, you know, budgets and things like that. So there's other ways, you know, and I know there's tons of YouTube videos out there and stuff showing you kind of how to make different types of hydroponic systems out of, you know, just readily available supplies out there, you know, from your hardware store. So that makes it really fun if you're into that kind of DIY stuff.
Well, you know, I run in these rooms and I hear a lot of people are really trying to figure out how to grow their own food, you know, plants and so forth. So these kinds of systems and educating us is so essential. So I really appreciate this. Thanks for holding this room, you guys. Hi, Brandon. Thanks again. I'm going to take off. Thanks a lot, y'all.
Hey, Paige. Thanks.
Yeah, so kind of to like to that point a little bit in a way is like the last type of hydroponic system I had, you know, like the fourth type that we categorize into is what ZipGrow falls into. And these are drip systems. So essentially these are systems that use, you know, a small trickle of water kind of constantly flowing. So ZipGrow towers fall into this category. So the towers, each one has a drip emitter or a emitter of sorts that's trickling water down the system, constantly keeping the roots wet. Keeping your media moist. And there's a few other systems that fall in this category. So, you know, I think one of the most popular DIY hydroponic systems is like a Beto bucket or a Dutch bucket system with clay pellets in them. This would fall under a drip system as well. And, you know, Rockwool systems, where they use like a Rockwool cube in a big greenhouse, they use drip systems as well. CocoCoir, a lot of the media-based systems are drip-based hydroponic systems in the sense that there's a media there to support the plant roots and structure. But really that's about it. And all the nutrients and, you know, life force is given to it through the nutrient solution. And, you know, we quite often pair the ZipGrow system with other systems like, you know, if someone's got a greenhouse and the unique thing about the ZipGrow system is we can fit it both indoors and in a greenhouse setting. So it's vertical, you know, it's upright, maximizing that plant count. But because we're not stacking systems on top of each other, we get this ability to use it in a greenhouse and get proper light reflection and airflow on the entire crop. So, you know, we've got some customers who are using, you know, the towers in the corner to grow their strawberries, but they wanted to do, you know, bell peppers as well. So they have, you know, a Dutch bucket system or a deep water culture system on, you know, in the same structure. And they pair those two together to give a, you know, a better diverse product offering. So we're not going to sit here and say, you know, ZipGrow is the best hydroponic system for every single crop out there. We at ZipGrow offer, you know, multiple systems. We offer consulting and construction on multiple systems because we like to pair what works best and make sure, you know, you're getting the best shot at growing what you want to grow. I'm going to invite, I think, Rick we got here.
I think that was me. Good afternoon, folks.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Awesome. This is awesome. I have been waiting for something like this for quite some time because I'm not your average gardener, even that I have been doing it my entire life. And I'm 54. The thing about it is that for the past 23, I have been doing it with barely any eyesight. And that makes the fun part because my question is, when the measurement of the additives that I would have to be putting into it, how can I put, obviously I'm married, so I would have my wife to do it, but try to put yourself in my position. Do you think it is possible to figure it out on your own, or I will need some, well, everybody needs to learn, you know, in the beginning, because I have fish tanks and I pull out water from my fish tanks and I go around my plants, you know, I've got quite a decent size here to grow things, and I will, you know, pour that water onto the root system. But I'm doing a lot of in-ground growing. I have never attempted aquaponics, and by the way, obviously hydroponics, but from container gardening, in-ground gardening, grafting with help of my wife, we have done most everything. So to finalize, because I want this, you know, I have the space. When I built this home, I have a wall that is 20 feet in length and 10 feet in height, and it's covered. So it's an exterior porch. I have water, I have electricity, you know, it's all set up for this. And I have been living here for 15 years and I have done nothing. So.
Yeah, for sure. So I think, you know, this kind of circles back to a lot of discussions we've had internally at ZipGrow, and it's about how do we make this as accessible to people as possible. You know, hydroponics is so exciting in the sense that You know, it provides accessibility to a lot of people who, you know, want to get involved in this industry, want to grow their own food and want to learn about this. So one thing we did with our some of our recent products, like the Zip Garden, for example, it's got a very measured reservoir in it. It's a certain amount of water. We often, you know, went down the route of, you know, selling people liquid nutrients, selling them the pH pen, the EC meter, and all the fertilizer, like everything you need to grow hydroponically. We found a lot of people just want to grow the plants and they want that part to be as easy as possible. So what we did is we pre-measured everything. So for example, the Zip Garden, it's a, I want to say, I think it's a 6 gallon reservoir. I could be wrong on that. Maybe an 8 gallon reservoir. And you know, you top it up with water every 2 weeks. You got two packets, one's your A fertilizer, one's your B. Throw those two in, mix it up, and then run the system for 2 weeks. And then every 2 weeks, you dump that bucket out, put it back, refill it, and dose the same nutrients. They're pre-packaged or pre-dosed packages in a way. And we've had some really positive feedback to that in the sense that it is a little overwhelming for even people, you know, yourself, you know about gardening, you know about plants, you're a seasoned gardener. A lot of our customers haven't even done that. And, you know, they get overwhelmed by the aspect of trying to, you know, dose the nutrients correctly and do this and this and that. So making it accessible and easy as an option, you know, is something we're really working towards. And I think it's something we kind of had a win with that pre-dose, you know, nutrient dosing. But on even the liquid nutrient side, realistically, you know, once you get things dialed in, you know, once you have a bit of a process for doing things the same way, you know, every crop's different. You can't prescribe the same nutrients to every crop and every system. But once you have familiarity with it and you've kind of logged that, you know, it's this much water every week, this much nutrient every week, it's pretty well the same. You know, you have your little, you can have your little measuring cup and it's this much A fertilizer, this much B fertilizer. Usually those two are in a one-to-one ratio anyways. So once you have it figured out, it's, you know, weekly adding the same amount and it's pretty straightforward. And in terms of, you know, accessibility to the plants and, you know, it does provide that option. I don't know if that really answered your question, but it's also fantastic feedback to us as we design this equipment with that in mind too.
Perfect answer. Yeah. That, see, because when have gone play, they're like, you can't do this. You can't, you know, and I hear so many, you can't do it. And I'm just tired of that. You can't do it. I just go out and get it done. So
yeah, get on, good on you.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. If you really, if you met me in person, you see me, he has to have some hidden eyes somewhere because I was out with a machete today, cutting down banana plants and replanting and stuff like that. Because this visual impairment hasn't stopped me, but going back to the topic, the measuring of the, but once, you know, you, like you said, I have measuring spoons, you know, that are not for the kitchen, they're for my utensils outdoors. So it's say two of these, one of these or vice versa. And I've figured out, I'm not, you know, I can get it done.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Thank you so much, Rick.
Okay, no, and thank you. And let's go for more people to be able to have questions. Let me pause. Yeah, because if no, I will stay on. Sorry about it.
No, it's okay. It's wonderful. Yeah, so I think actually kind of coming off of that point, another thing, you know, a note I had to talk about when it comes to hydroponics, and a lot of this is based on, you know, base knowledge as you get into hydroponics, and something that I think is under-referenced, and it's funny because if I talk to anyone who's taken a horticulture degree or, you know, an agriculture degree, they're going to roll their eyes because they've been had this, you know, hit through their head so many times, but there's this wonderful theory or this law. It's called Liebig's law. So Liebig was a scientist back in the 1800s, but he had this theory that he developed about plants. And it's that essentially the yield of a plant is limited by the nutrient that's present in the least quantity relative to its demands for the plant growth. So he created this theory that, you know, we often see people are like, well, I want more yield. I'm going to add more light. Well, it's not that simple, right? You know, it's there's a limiting factor there. There's a sense that you can only increase the yield through light if you also increase CO2, or if you also increase nitrogen, or you also increase magnesium. And he created this graphic to kind of explain it. And I wonder if I could find a way to share this afterwards, but it's like a bucket. If you look it up, it's Liebig, L-I-E-B-I-G-S, Liebig's law. And it's this bucket, you know, like a picture, like a wooden pail with all the slats on the side. And in the middle is water, and it says yield. The water's your yield. And all the different slats on the outside are nitrogen, magnesium, calcium, you know, phosphorus, sulfur, you know, CO2, light, root zone, you know, space. And this graphic kind of shows the idea that if one of those slats is a little too low, it doesn't matter how much you increase the other ones, the water's going to overflow. Your yield's never going to get higher. And it's just a great way of kind of explaining that, because a lot of new growers often think, you know, I want this to grow faster, and they just add more fertilizer, and it never works. You always have to take almost a holistic approach to the whole plant, the health of the whole plant. And this isn't specific to home growers. This is something we run into with commercial growers too, where, you know, well, if I crank the CO2 up and saturate the plants, they're going to be so happy. And like, in a way, yes, you know, in scientific literature, you increase the CO2, you increase the photosynthetic capability of the plant and how much it's producing. But only if it's paired with more light and more fertilizer and, you know, drier air temperatures and all these other things. So that's something to consider when you get into hydroponics, is, you know, I have to consider all factors, you know, not just fertilizer, not just environments. Something probably for a whole separate podcast we could talk about is VPD, or vapor pressure deficit. And this is actually a very important measurement if you're getting into something commercial, in the sense that humidity and temperature have a very important role to play with plants. They interact with each other pretty significantly, and they really dictate how much water is moving through the plant and out of the leaves of the plant at any point in time. So that VPD measurement is something to be very, you know, cognizant of, in the sense that it's almost more important than fertilizer. And, you know, I always like to say, you know, that in controlled environment agriculture, this Liebig's law theory, it really expands to beyond nutrients. It's the environment, it's the light, the CO2, humidity, temperature, water temperature, everything is included in that. So, you know, not to overwhelm anyone, you can still grow on a small scale in your basement, no problem, or in your porch or on your backyard. But there are things to, you know, think about when you're seeing challenges or deficiencies with your plant. So
Tyler, I did post a picture or a Google image of that Liebig's Law bucket.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
If anybody wants to click on that. And then we did have Christine that came up a little bit ago too. I didn't know if she had a question real quick before we go on.
Yeah, for sure, Christine. Sorry, I didn't mean to ignore you there.
Oh, not at all. I've been enjoying just listening in. So at the peak of COVID, my 15-year-old son, who's here, say hi, Connor.
Hi.
He decided that with what we were seeing with the food scarcity around, especially around vegetables and stuff, and the price increases, that he would teach people how to grow microgreens. We've been growing for about, 10 years?
Yeah.
And so he developed a small kit, and he's been successfully promoting it. Way to go, 15-year-old entrepreneur. But this whole concept of this plastics, because the tray that we've been utilizing is a plastic tray, I've been going out and looking to see different ways, alternatives to, and I just haven't found a bottom watering tray. If anybody has suggestions on where I could look for a source for a tray that isn't a plastic tray, or one that's a safe plastic. Is there a safe plastic? And then my second ask is, we've been using 100-millimeter Coco Courier discs, and we're starting to have a shortage, a supplier issue with that. So if anybody has a source for Coco Courier, that would be helpful as well.
Yeah, Christine, I'll tell you just real quick. So first of all, if you're talking about bottom line or microgreen trays,
yes.
Pretty much everything is going to be some sort of plastic if you're typing in trays or microgreen trays. But if you really want to, you could use glass. You could use any sort of glass. You can use stainless, any kind of some trays that you put in the oven will be stainless steels, and the lip is raised up a little bit. You could do that. You could, I mean, because you can grow microgreens just like on paper towels if you wanted to. So you could definitely don't have to use the plastics. But if you click the club, like up top, we actually have like a room of Donnie Greens, who's actually who I learned how to grow microgreens from originally, coming up. And then we have another microgreens room on Sunday that we haven't thrown up on there. So we'd be glad to have you on there because, yeah, and your son too. I'm sure he'll be there with this. And I'm gonna post this link up here.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Donnie. I know I've talked with Donnie straight up before. Yeah, you know, the problem when you get into the glass, and we've looked at ceramics and things like that, is two. One is shipping costs, but two is breakage. And if we want to maintain that bottom watering process, which I'm a firm believer in bottom watering, we live down in Florida and mold is a constant issue. And to not have the ability to bottom water is a, you know, that's just massive when you get down to densely populations like microgreens. I don't know. I just haven't come up with other than going out and creating and sourcing thousands of, you know, at a time and having somebody to develop a tray that I was looking, you know, if anybody knows one, I've thought about using those sprouting trays. They're round with, they're stainless steel. But just thought I'd throw it out there.
No, yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, in this this room we're doing just hydroponics, which you actually could, obviously could do like hydroponics microgreens. But yeah, definitely come check out like the two microgreen rooms, or even like after this, like anytime like in the club, because we'll definitely get you together like with the Mo, like even in the most like humid basements, like we'll figure it out. We'll get you together.
Awesome. Yeah, I really want to get away from the plastics. I've followed you, Brandon. I'm done. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us and thanks for sharing.
Yeah, thanks, Christine. And yeah, I mean, microgreens is an interesting topic. It's almost like a beast of its own. We've dealt with you know, quite a few microgreens customers, and the challenge of getting away from, you know, those little plastic trays. And a lot of the solutions we've seen people come up with are at least getting to a reusable plastic, right? Like getting to something that's not get a breakdown after two or three cycles or whatever. But no, I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, we've definitely, you know, we're not a one-time use. And we, even when we were selling our microgreens at markets, we really tried to stay away from plastic packaging. Like we're mindful of that. And I guess the next question I have is I own three, they're not the towers that you that are sold by. I wrote down the name of it. The sponsor of this room, Zip something, Zip Grow.
That'd be us, Zip Grow.
Which, gosh, those are beautiful. They're like art in your room. I love them. Couple things. I just the PVC. I was looking at, you know. And the little plastic cups that we drop our rock wool into, those concern me as well. I, you know, it's all freaking plastic. I hate this stuff.
But yeah, so I think like back to the point we talked about at the beginning a lot was like there's, for example, you know, you pay a premium for Zip Grow towers. You know, they're not a cheap thing. There's a reason for that. It's because, you know, they're made to be used in a hydroponic environment. And again, like you're paying for a UV stable plastic, you're using something that's going to be reusable for a long time. We really put an emphasis on reusable media. Our matrix media, our towers are all reusable. And I actually just wrote a blog about this on our newsletter for Earth Day about, you know, getting away from rock wool, getting away from even cocoa in a way. You know, nothing against cocoa coir. The stuff's fantastic. But from a sustainability perspective, you know, coconut has to be transported from somewhere. It's got to be processed. And just, you know, not to say one's better than the other, but taking those things into consideration. So, you know, we've really taken the approach. We've got a media, that's been reused. You know, we have customers who've been reusing it for 10 years. We've got towers that come with, I don't know, Sean, what is it, like a 20-some year warranty? We've never had any really ever returned. And the whole aspect is we make it once. You know, you buy it for life. With, you know, the odd replacement, for the most part, you know, you're not throwing these out after a year or two. They're not ending up in the landfill. They're not, you know, can require energy to be recycled. It's all about buying it once and using it for life. There's a subreddit that I think we should fall under. It's called Buy It For Life. And I'm a big fan of that concept. And, you know, the plugs we use too, you know, we're very conscious of using certain kinds of plugs. And we've started looking a lot at this material called grow foam. And I think Sean talked about them briefly at the beginning, but grow foam plugs are, it's a foam, it's an engineered foam, fully biodegradable into only CO2 and water. Very big emphasis on sustainability and like a cradle to grave approach of both manufacturing and, you know, how it's handled down the road, how it's handled eventually, because, you know, rock wool, for example, can be recycled. That being said, that doesn't mean all of it is recycled. It requires very specific facilities. It requires a lot of energy to recycle. And, you know, there's a lot of rock wool used. Like there's millions of pounds of rock wool used in hydroponics every year. And it can just end up in a landfill. But anyways, something interesting to consider. So on the topic of nutrients, like and some of the things we go through with hydroponics in terms of nutrients, and when we teach this is, you know, it's very similar to soil-based hydroponic or soil-based culture. So, you know, you got your macros, you got your micros. So macronutrients being your nitrogen, your phosphorus, your potassium, and then also, you know, your calcium, magnesium, and sulfur. Those are the ones that are essentially, you know, needed in the most quantities. You know, and oftentimes people say, you know, macronutrients versus micronutrients, the macros are the most important. And that's not actually true. It's just that they're needed in the larger quantity, whereas micronutrients are needed just in small quantities. So your micronutrients are just as important. Some of them are actually more important and more limiting in a way. But they're, you know, your iron, your manganese, your molybdenum, boron, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes your micronutrients are the hardest ones to get right. And so in your, I'm just looking at the chats there. Have an affiliate program. We do have a like Upstart University, like Sean talked about. Sorry, the question was, do we have an affiliate program? We run this online learning platform called Upstart University. So
am I the only one that lost him?
No, I'm not. Tyler, you might have muted yourself.
That's one thing that's
hard. You know, more in depth.
Oh, Tyler, we lost you right about when you were talking about Grower University. Sorry, that's one hard thing about this app is you don't know when they can't hear you.
So no worries. No worries.
If you can kind of rewind back to addressing her question about the affiliate and the university.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, my internet must have cut out for a second there. You can hear me now though?
Yes, we can.
Awesome. So, so Upstart University is a great way to kind of go more in depth into a lot of this. So, you know, we're just touching on the basics, but Upstart University is, you know, I think there's something like almost 100 hours of materials on there that you can go through. It's all set up like online courses. You know, there's quizzes, there's videos, there's interactive sections. It teaches you everything about hydroponics, you know, start to finish. A lot of our commercial customers, when we sell them a farm, we give them a subscription to this and we'll train them from, you know, just average Joe up to full scale commercial farmer with this platform. So I'd highly recommend it if you're interested in learning a lot more about hydroponics and more in depth. And then in terms of, you know, how nutrients react compared to soil, some important things to consider with, you know, hydroponics is that, you know, soil-based growing, it offers almost like a buffer to the plant. You know, a lot of your nitrogens and your calcium, magnesium is held in that root zone, and the plant can access it when it needs it in a way. Whereas in hydroponics and you know, soil is growing, a lot of that is just held in the water and it's transferred a different way. So you just be cognizant of that when you're, you know, dosing nutrients. You have to be careful that you don't overdose, you don't burn the root zone, you don't have that buffering capability. And then, yeah, so it's something that, you know, stems from that is that, you know, in hydroponics, which is quite both a, you know, a blessing and a curse, is that when you make nutrient changes, you'll see it a lot faster in hydroponic crops than you would in soil-based crops. So, you know, a typical lettuce crop grown in the ground, you could overdo the nutrients a little bit, underdo the nutrients a little bit, but it takes, you know, a week or whatever for it to work its way through before you see that problem. But realistically in hydroponics, you know, you give that crop no iron or a lack of nitrogen for a day. You know, by the next day you're seeing it, they respond very fast. And this makes, you know, makes it so you have to make quick decisions. Sometimes you have to react to that. But something, you know, we really emphasize to our customers is that, a lot of the time these deficiencies aren't necessarily deficiencies at all. So if you're mixing, you know, a pre-mix fertilizer, for your hydroponics, at the recommended dose and you're seeing a deficiency on your crop, it's quite often an actual environmental issue more than it is a nutrient solution issue. So what happens all the time is we see calcium deficiencies in crops. So lettuce, for example, you see tip burn on lettuce indoors and in greenhouses sometimes. And this is actually a result of a humidity problem, believe it or not. So something like calcium is you know, not as soluble in water as all everything else that you're given to the plant. So and what it is, it's a large molecule, so it has a hard time moving through the plant. So to get from, you know, the roots to the tip of the plant, calcium needs to, you know, move a lot of water with it to kind of flow it to the tip of the plant per se. So if you have a lot of humidity, you know, it's humid outside the leaf, the plant's not moving a lot of water, right? The air is not pulling a lot of water out of that leaf, the calcium's not going to move. So it's just a way of thinking about it is, you know, sometimes you see a calcium deficiency and it actually means you need to either increase the airflow or bring down the humidity in your room. Cause you know, very rarely is there not enough calcium in your solution. It's that your environment's not tailored to meet the plant. And that kind of comes back to that whole Liebig's law, the idea that there might be one limiting factor in there. So also, there is, you know, a way of measuring fertilizer a little bit differently in hydroponics. So we use something called electroconductivity, or EC for short. You'll hear that term thrown around everywhere, EC, EC. And this is pretty simple, actually, in the way that most fertilizers are present as salts in water. So, you know, your nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, once it's dissolved into water, it's present as a salt. And if, you know, you understand electricity a little bit, you know that, you know, pure water doesn't conduct electricity. Only water that's got salts in it can conduct electricity. So it's not really the water that's conducting electricity, it's the individual salts dissolved in the water. So, you know, the more the salt, the higher the EC value. So this is a way that if we're, you know, dosing all our nutrients at the right ratio, we can actually measure the level of nutrient in the water. So we use an EC value, and EC, it's measured as kind of a conductance or a voltage differential in the water. And it's measured in millisiemens or microsiemens, which is a measure of conductance. And, you know, for example, if we're growing lettuce, typically we look for an EC of like 1 to 1.2. If you see it dropping, you add a little bit more fertilizer. If you see it's too high, you know your plant's not taking up nutrients correctly. And you can make adjustments based on that. So EC is a term you'll hear referred to a lot in hydroponics. And then, yeah, pH. So very, very important aspect of hydroponics is pH. People often overlook this both in soil and hydroponic growing. So really, you know, the pH of a solution, as I'm sure you all know, is how acidic it is, how acidic or how basic a solution is. And what it's really measuring is hydrogen and how it's reacting in that water. So like acids, for example, lose or release hydrogen ions. Positively charged hydrogen ions, whereas bases accept hydrogen ions. And because acids give up hydrogen ions, there's more free hydrogen and it's measured differently versus a base, which where there's less free hydrogen. So a low pH is an acidic solution, whereas a high pH is a basic solution. And this is important because it just influences a lot how, you know, nutrients are available to plants. So, you know, for example, those hydrogens in the water actually interact on a chemical level with a lot of salts and nutrients and how they're brought up by the plant. So if your pH is off, you can actually see a deficiency again. It's not necessarily the amount of nutrients in the water, it's how available it is to the plant. So a great example is iron. You know, if your pH is anywhere lower than 5.8, you're actually in a zone where iron is toxic to plants. It's too much iron. So, you know, you want to be above 5.8. Most hydroponic crops, you're growing in a range of like 5.8 to 6.5. There's some outliers there, like, you know, a blueberry. If you want to grow hydroponic blueberries, they actually have an EC of like 5.0. It's crazy acidic. Nothing else will really grow that well at that level. And with aquaponics, because you're balancing keeping fish alive, you have to go to something more neutral. So a 6.8 to a 7.2, whereas, you know, 7 is, you know, perfectly neutral, clean water. So there's a lot of variability to this, but for a general sense, like, I always set our systems to like a 6.1 or a 6.2 pH is what we're aiming for. And yeah, just some other like things to consider are, you know, water temperature, especially with aquaponics. Once you incorporate fish, you got to keep the fish alive or you're not going to have nutrients. So keeping your temperature in the right range as well for your plants. Lower temperatures tend to not, you know, grow algae. You don't promote as much bacterial growth, and it helps, you know, keep your room from becoming too humid. Temperature also affects the oxygen in the water, and that's another factor you have to consider is dissolved oxygen. So quite often in a hydroponic system, you throw an air stone or an air pump in there, and that helps oxygenate the water. You know, it keeps oxygen at the roots. You know, there's a direct correlation between how well a plant grows and how well it takes up nutrients and how much oxygen is available to it in the water. And a lower temperature, you tend to have a higher DO or dissolved oxygen level. So those two kind of go hand in hand. And another one that I think we're going to hop on here for is water quality. So the hardness of your water really coming in is super important. On a commercial scale, we do not sell a hydroponic farm without some type of reverse osmosis system. I know a lot of people say, oh, my water's really good. But, you know, back to that idea of EC or electroconductivity, if you know, your water coming in has a bunch of calcium or carbonates in it, that are coming into your system from your tap water, even if it's like good, clean water, you know, if you're using EC to measure fertilizer, you know, a 1.2 EC for lettuce, for example, you're assuming your water coming in is like 0 or 0.1. If your tap water comes in at 0.2 or 0.3, which is pretty normal, all the way up to like 0.8, some people have hard water and their EC is very high coming in, all of a sudden, the amount of those nutrients that are available in the water is super diminished. It's reduced significantly. So you get some locked up nutrients, and you want to make sure that you have like the purest water coming in. So, you know, reverse osmosis is very important on a commercial level. On a hobby level, you can get away with it as long as you're swapping out your nutrient solution quite often. But, you know, even then, sometimes if you have super hard water, you just can't get plants to grow hydroponically. And really the workaround for that is distilled water or like rainwater. You just got to watch the pH on them, make sure they're not too acidic. But, you know, rainwater is great if you're a greenhouse grower, they love rainwater because it's just so pure and clean. But you do have to make sure it's not too acidic. Yeah, reverse osmosis systems are a whole nother beast we can talk about another time, but definitely recommend learning about them if you're getting into commercial hydroponics and you want to grow on a larger scale.
Yeah, Lisa, one thing I wanted to ask you guys before you guys go is what about, I know a lot of times people ask, are there ways that you can make your own like nutrient solutions, like whether you wanted to or you were in a situation where you had to and still use hydroponics?
Yeah. So there's a lot out there, and you know, I'm not going to claim to know every detail about these nutrient solutions. And like, you know, my favorite approach is to direct people to the right resource. That being said, you know, one way to look at it is compost teas. Some people grow organic hydroponically with compost teas or like worm tea. That does work. It's just challenging to regulate, you know, the different measurements of fertilizers. So, and another way too, like to grow, you know, there's a bit of a discrepancy in the sense that in Canada and Europe, you can't get organic certification if you're growing hydroponically. In the US, you can. The organic hydroponic growers who have achieved it are using organic fertilizers, which usually are more complex sugars that are being broken down by microbes into those, you know, your nitrogens, your phosphorus, your potassium. Quite often they use like what you call a biofilter. And a biofilter is just like, it's kind of like think of it like a bucket or a pond or an area where all your nutrient solution with, you know, your complex sugars. So sometimes like things like molasses are used. It gives it a chance to get broken down by microbes into smaller nutrients and more, you know, simplified nutrients like your nitrogens and, you know, iron and so on. before it goes onto your system. That's a very complex way of doing it. We honestly, you know, we're not pro or against any way of growing. We often recommend avoiding organic nutrients at the beginning, just until you've become comfortable with it, because it's so hard to measure, you know, and the feedback from it, you know, that feedback loop of how the plant reacts to it is challenging. And again, it's not like soil where you have a bit of a buffer in the sense that like soil holds a certain amount of nutrients, but then it lets the rest go. The plant will only take up so much. In hydroponics, if you overdo some of those things, you'll burn the plant pretty quickly. If you underdo it, you see it very fast. So there are ways, and I would definitely take a look at things like compost teas, worm teas, permaculture methods that involve creating your own nutrient solution. And you can buy some organic fertilizers that in a way you're making your own nutrient solution because you're fermenting kind of those nutrients out. You know, the easiest way is definitely to use like a pre-mixed liquid nutrient. Usually they're sold as like an A and a B. So there's part A and part B. And the only reason for that is because when you're dealing with salt-based nutrients, they will precipitate if they're mixed and their concentration. So what that means is like, there's a lot of calcium in the one, you know, there's a lot of phosphorus in the other. If you mix those two at high concentrations, they'll actually bind and drop out as a solid. They'll react with each other. So you can't mix them until they've been diluted in water. So that's why you always see A and B nutrients. Usually they're like a one-to-one ratio. They're pretty straightforward. Don't let them overwhelm you. And quite often, like those companies have really good instructions labeled on the bottle and how to use them. But yeah, that's a way of doing it. You can also, I mean, if you want to tackle it, you can mix salt-based nutrients from scratch. You can buy the individual components. I talked earlier about Hoagland solution. You can actually look that recipe up online and buy each individual component, like each salt chemical in its like bare form, and mix your own nutrient mix from scratch. It's like, again, probably, you know, if you're growing on huge scale, massive greenhouses do this because they can buy those things in bulk and save a lot of money mixing it themselves, and they can make minor modifications as they go. For the home grower, it's maybe hard to justify, but if you're just interested for the sake of learning, yeah, I mean, take a look at Hoagland solution. It's kind of interesting. And then there are different mixtures that have been developed over the years that you can look up the recipes for and you know, make your own nutrient solution that encompasses all the bare minimums of growing a plant in water. That help, Brandon?
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. I already got like two pages of notes over here. I don't know about everybody else.
No worries.
I have my memory. I have to change my into my chip. It's full. It's stuffed. And I have been rowing the island to keep it in place so I don't lose my Wi-Fi.
Fair enough. Yeah. And I mean, like, we can go way to depth in this, but I mean, any questions anyone has, like I said, we go through Upstair a lot for a lot of those questions. We got a YouTube channel that's got a ton of information on it. We've got like hundreds of YouTube videos over the years. You'll recognize some of the people on there, including myself. And there's a lot of resources out there. It's just finding them. But we're more than willing to help people. You know, we've got a great team of growers, and that's something that ZipGrow prides themselves on. Is we don't just sell farms. I'm going to quote our CEO in saying that we sell farmers. People come to us and they want a farm. They have this dream of farming, and we don't just sell them equipment. We're selling them expertise. We're selling them knowledge, learning, education, competence, training, everything in one. And that's what ZipGrow is. That's what when you buy ZipGrow, you're buying us as a company. You're buying our access to our expertise, and we take a lot of pride in that. So it's a way we've tried to set ourselves apart in this industry, by having the experts come on team and answer the questions. But and that's everything from, you know, the hobby grower all the way to the commercial grower and all kinds of systems too.
Hey, I just wanted to ask Tyler or Sean, you mentioned having all these resources for education, which I value so much as a very new hydroponic grower. But for people who are just beginning who are using other systems or systems that they've DIY'd, I just want to clarify that educational content is available for people outside of the ZipGrow system. Is that correct?
Yeah, I can address that. Yeah, for sure. So a lot of the stuff, like on our YouTube channel, for example, is fairly a lot of it, you know, revolves around like Zipgrow towers and Zipgrow technology, but a lot of it is just like fundamental information. So that type of information really applies to, you know, all different sort of hydroponic techniques. So there's a lot of really like baseline stuff. There's some, you know, if you really want to get, you know, nerd out and get into some of the real science and plant biology stuff, there's some of that for you. And then there's also just very, you know, practical stuff. And yeah, like I said, a lot of that revolves around or is kind of applicable to all, you know, sort of hydroponics techniques and things like that, you know, DIY or otherwise. And then Upstart University is kind of the same way. It's designed to be sort of, I guess, for lack of a better term, sort of technology agnostic a little bit. So, you know, meaning it kind of addresses, again, just some of that foundational stuff that applies to everything. So, and then, you know, aside from that, I mean, YouTube is obviously a great place for a lot of different things. So, you know, there's a lot of great people out there that are sharing their knowledge and stuff. I'm trying to think, I guess I don't have any off the top of my head, but yeah, if you just, you know, keyword search that stuff, there's a lot of great information out there to help you get started.
Thank you so much. That's really valuable. And I wasn't aware of the considerations around tap water. So I'm going to do a little deep dive on some of that information. And I really look forward to seeing all of the knowledge you guys are sharing. I'm going to check out the Upstart University content as well. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, no, it's our pleasure. No, we're, you know, our kind of overall mission and goal is, you know, it's highlighted now more than ever is sort of, you know, food supply chains and, you know, kind of before the past few years it had been, you know, we kind of noticed that the food supply chain is very fickle in the best of times. You know, I mean, all our lettuce is coming from kind of just a couple places in the country. It travels a long ways to get to, you know, if you live in the Northeast or the South or wherever. I mean, generally speaking, your produce is traveling an awful long ways to get to you. And all that time, it's losing nutrients, it's losing freshness, it's losing, you know, shelf life. All that stuff is kind of related to each other. And so, you know, I'm sure everyone is familiar with, you know, you come home with your fresh herbs or whatever, you use what you need for your recipe, and the rest is, you know, in a lot of cases, especially where I'm at, you know, it's pretty much slimy the next day or a couple of days after. So, you know, we're really thrilled to kind of help people and empower people to produce that stuff, you know, themselves. And, you know, I'm looking at my, I've got one of our little farm walls in my dining room here, and I've got a bunch of fresh herbs. It kind of allows you to harvest exactly what you need for whatever you're cooking that day, and the rest is stays fresh on your lawn. So you're getting the freshest possible produce with great nutrient levels, and thrilled to be kind of involved with everybody here who obviously has an interest in doing this for themselves. And I think it's a super important thing going forward. You know, like I said, now more than ever to kind of take some of that power into your own hands. So. And, you know, all this educational content and things like that is kind of our way of, you know, helping to empower people to do that. And then if you do have any, you know, specific questions, like Tyler said, our growers and stuff are always happy to help. So you can reach out to hello@zipgrow.com is kind of our general, you know, email address for any of those questions. So, you know, fire away on there and we'll do our best to help you out. But yeah, I don't know, Brandon, I think, I don't know how much more time we have here, but we can take a couple more questions or, yeah, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, if anybody had any other questions you guys wanted to throw in the chat, but no, I really appreciate you guys' time. I know we went over the hour a little bit, but if you mess around and let us, we'll be here for like 6 hours talking about this. So I know we're all excited about you guys coming back, including the people that are listening that aren't on Clubhouse right now that are just like streaming this or that are listening to this replay later. And throughout the conversation, I've been trying to switch out the link so you guys can check out everything the Zip Bro, how's it going on? I know at least like all the members in this club, like we really appreciate companies that are just educating people and giving this information, because growing food is like should be at the forefront of like what everybody is doing right now. Like whatever your education or living status or wherever you live, it's just something that, yeah, it should be common knowledge, but it's just it's not anymore. And just the fact that there are people out here that are just sharing it, yeah, we just really appreciate having you guys.
Yeah, us too. This is great, and we're like Brandon said, we're kind of excited to do some of these in the future where we can we're going to go in depth a little bit more on a couple of these different topics. So if you've enjoyed this and you're interested in some more of that, keep an eye out for that, and hopefully we'll see you again down the road.
Yeah, for sure. Super stoked to be here, Brandon. Thanks for having us. And like I said, I appreciate everybody tuning in, and I'm excited to hop back on another time, and we'll try to answer as many questions as we can.
Looking forward to it. And then I see some people are just now coming in. The replays are on. I know I'm going to probably listen to this probably like 3 or 4 times. Tightening up my notes a little bit more. This is the Food Girls United Clubhouse group. If you guys aren't already members, make sure you join at the top, and we'll be back with another room in the summit in about 15 minutes about growing mushrooms. But we definitely appreciate Tyler and Sean taking time out of their day to educate us on hydroponics, and we will see them again soon. I'll see all you guys again here in about 15 minutes.
Thank you guys so much. I appreciate this.
Yep, same here. Thanks a lot.
All right, everybody. All the stuff in the chat will be over there in the room replay, too, if anybody needs to revisit some of those links. And make sure you guys subscribe and save ZipGrow's YouTube. Definitely sign up for that online education. And again, those links will be on the replay. Definitely not going to regret signing up for that. And I'm going to end the room in a couple seconds. And I appreciate everybody who was in here learning with us.
Thanks, y'all.